חג הזה, זמן שמחתנו. This is the time of our rejoicing.
The time for rejoicing is a Jewish festival of Sukkot, which was just the other week. This is KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food. And there is always food at a Jewish festival. Sukkot is also known as the Festival of the Booths. One of the rituals uses a fruit called etrog. What is etrog? Here's a quick definition from Rabbi John Carrier and his fall Jewish holiday challenge.
It says, during this holiday, you shall bring together four things. One is a pre-Eitz Hadar, that is a fruit of a beautiful tree. And for some reason, they thought this was a citron, which looks like a lemon that had a baby with a chew toy. It smells good, though. When you get it, you should smell it. I think it smells like Fruity Pebbles.
It definitely looks like a lemon. And etrogim, the plural of etrog, are grown on the Central Coast. You may remember my visit to Norman Beard's banana plantation in Goleta.
You probably know about those. That was in the Garden of Eden. The Jewish people put it in their synagogue during their most religious days. I get a lot of calls on those in September.
Yep. This fancy festival fruit is grown here on the Central Coast, though there is no evidence that it was in the Garden of Eden. The first time I heard about etrog, it was suggested that it was one of the fruits that is mentioned in Genesis in the Garden of Eden. I can't find any evidence of that. Is that true? I'll take that as a no. So I went in search of how it is grown, how it is used in the festival, and if it's possible to use it in cooking. Before we get into that, let's have a little education on the Festival of Sukkot.
Hi, I'm Lon Moskowitz, an ordained rabbi, and I currently step down from my position at California Men's Colony as the Jewish chaplain. So there are three festivals found in the Bible. The Passover festival, in Hebrew that's Pesach, Shavuot, which is the Pentecost festival, and Sukkot, which is the Festival of the Booths. Each one of these festivals has a threefold significance to them, an agricultural, a historical, as well as a religious or psychological significance to them. And each of them is connected up to a season. So the Festival of Booths is the fall festival, and agriculturally, it is the close of the harvest season. It's the festival where the grapes have all been picked and harvested and turned into wine, and the earth is going into its resting period for a couple of months, and all the farmers' work is done, and so there was a big celebration. Historically, the Festival of Booths reminds the Jewish community and the religious community that the Jews were enslaved in Egypt, and they were given their freedom, and it took 40 years for them to traverse the desert and to enter the Holy Land. And psychologically and religiously, the actual daylight is getting shorter. Darkness seems to be coming onto us. It's a period of time where we feel our vulnerability. It's a time for us to find comfort in the temporary things that we have in life that offer us meaning.
Rabbi Lon goes on to describe where the use of etrog came from in Hebrew history and a short description of the fruit.
The etrog actually is part of a bundle of flora that is used for the festival. In horticulture, there's no fruit, there's no tree designated as the Hadar. In the 23rd chapter of the book of Leviticus, there is the commandment that during the fall festival, you're to gather these four species. One is an Eitz Pri Hadar, the fruit from the Hadar tree. We cannot find a Hadar tree. There is no such thing as a Hadar tree in horticulture. However, from the Jewish traditional perspective, this fruit comes from a citron tree. And in Hebrew, a citron is called an etrog. The etrog being used at this festival is about 2,200 years old. We find symbols of the etrog along with the lulav on coins that were minted during the Maccabean period about 2,200 years ago. It's a rather interesting fruit, too. It's not smooth-skinned like a lemon or a grapefruit or an orange, and it's also not round. It's kind of oblong, and it's dimpled all the way around. Very beautiful and very fragrant. These four species, when bundled together in a bouquet, can be likened unto the communities that we live in. And only together can our communities be rich and full and complete. The etrog, which smells beautiful and has taste, is likened unto an individual who is both learned and is active in good deeds in the world around us. I would have to order them from Israel. They're pretty expensive. It's about $50 for a set of the four species. And it comes overnight, and you open it up, and voila, you put it together. And I would take them into the institution, and we'd bundle them together. And I would give all of the inmates and any staff member the opportunity to hold and to shake this bouquet of four species up and down and to all the corners of the earth, holding the holy community together and recognizing that God is above and God is below and God is in all four corners of the world and God is there as the source of our being. But what's interesting about that is in large Jewish communities such as in Israel and in places like New York, you actually have a market that opens up just before the holiday, and they have vendors who sell the etrog. Sometimes they even inspect these things with magnifying glasses to find the etrog with the smoothest skin and the nicest ripples to it and the best fragrance.
Did you know that they grow in California?
I did not know that they grow them in California.
There is a grower in Big Sur who has about 20 or 30 trees.
And wow.
So the next time you need one, you can just tootle up to.
That is intriguing. Did you smell them?
Yeah, I brought one home.
Did you?
So I headed up to Big Sur, where there just happens to be an etrog plantation with a large flock of geese that you will hear in the background.
Inga DeRoche, I'm an artist and teacher.
David Sleeth, I'm also an artist.
Sequoia Sleeth, also an artist and musician.
Rio Sleeth, I'm also an artist.
Yeah, we're in Big Sur. We have several etrog trees, around 20. They were here when we bought them, but they were in a really poor state. Like they had no leaves and 5 or 6 years with no water. So they looked pretty much dead. When we bought the place, we sort of brought them back to life. This property was abandoned and sort of listed as like an etrog farm. And we drove by. No realtor would come and show us the place because there was a kind of like a Rottweiler breeding operation nearby. And so we drove by and we thought like, oh, I immediately thought it was like a 60s hippie commune that grew etrogs that was abandoned, but it wasn't. I didn't know about the fruit before we bought the place. So they're really difficult to grow here in Big Sur. I mean, we have shortages of water. We're off the grid completely. So we have to store our own energy and run it to the well, and our well runs partially dry. So citrus, it's good climate temperature-wise, but unless you have a lot of water, it's a really difficult fruit to grow. And it has a lot of like bugs and pests, and everything's organic here. So, I mean, it's been a challenge just to get them back to looking like this. And okay. They're still working on it.
I don't know a lot about citrus. I thought citrus grew in Florida and Southern California.
But here we get a lot of heat. I don't know if it's our elevation and yet the proximity to the ocean. So it's a very Mediterranean climate here, with the exception of not having enough water. I think temperature-wise, it's ideal. It stays pretty warm here year-round. We tend to get less of the fog and everything.
Except for today, the fog's all the way up here. It's like just on the border of your property.
Just on the border.
Yeah, exactly. And we sometimes wish it was up here, but you stand there and you look down into the fog and are like, oh, just a little bit higher.
It's like 20 feet away.
Yeah.
20 more feet.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
6 more inches. Come on.
Yeah, the other day we drove down and in the truck there's a little thermometer and like hop in the truck up here and it's 99. I don't know if the truck even registers anything above 100. And by the time you get down to Highway 1, it's 69. You know, just that elevation difference is.
Yeah, and it's not that far to Highway 1.
No, it's like a quarter mile, but we're about 800 feet up.
So you got about 20 trees here.
Yeah.
There's more etrogs here and here.
Gosh, that one's really big.
This is a Yemenite version of the etrog, which is a different variety. They're big. It's supposed to be perfectly grown with no blemishes. And an organic one in like a drought condition is just, it's always going to be kind of an ugly fruit.
Yeah, so this is about the size of a papaya. It's about the same shape and it's yellow like a lemon. And the skin you can feel is really thick.
The pith is this thick. It's like 2 inches. The fruit It's tiny.
Okay.
And there's no juice.
So it's not fleshy like a lemon inside?
No.
No.
This has this huge inch-wide dimple of brown, and that's because it's organic and doesn't get much water.
Yeah, like it'll like, they'll touch something. I think when they're normally grown, people put bags around them, like perfect them. But
this tree's not a great example. You can see how big the thorns are.
Oh, okay.
So they really easily spear themselves on their thorns and scar themselves.
Yeah, so they're flowering and it's going to bring a fruit. You can see the different stages. The flower is really fragrant too, if you want to smell it. Oh, here's one with a baby.
Okay. Oh, it's a very baby.
Yeah.
That's about, I don't know, the size of an eraser head.
Yeah, and then there's like the flower bud that stays on. Let me try to find different stages.
Here's a very green one.
Yeah, and that, but he's a big one too. They're really cute at this stage.
Oh yeah, they look like caviar limes.
Yeah.
Inga, David, and their two sons have told me that there is very little culinary use for all these etrogim that they grow.
It's kind of amazing if you sniff it.
Okay, it's very lemony.
Yeah, but really like...
It's like very lemony, yeah. But it kind of like has a...
Floral.
Very
floral. I was gonna say there's a little hint of like grapefruit. I sound like a snobby like wine person, but it seems more intense than than a lemon in terms of its smell. And you said that they don't taste good.
I don't think you could eat them. We do candy the peels, and we also will zest them and dry the zest and jar that
to fruit cakes.
Yeah,
we made like a limoncello. We made an etrogcello.
How was it?
We haven't tasted it yet. It's still seeping.
Yeah.
It's super, even more bitter when it's green. So
and it's already so bitter when it's ripe. I mean, they're not edible, really.
Yeah, just in order to candy it, you have to leach it multiple times. It's got a really nice bitterness and tannin, almost like a tannin.
But of course, I have to discover this for myself. So I asked my Jewish friend, Robin.
We usually don't eat them, because they are hard to find in the United States and quite expensive. It takes quite a bit of fruit to make jams and marmalades.
I just can't believe that this fruit can't be used for anything. It just seems really wasteful. Let me search for etrog recipes. Etrog recipes. Use your etrog with these five recipes. Etrog liquor, etrog marmalade, etrog cake, candied citron, and etrog candy cookies with etrog salt. Etrog bundt cake? As I look at all these recipes, I realize that they cannot be made from the etrog that I have. Even the etrog bundt cake just takes the peel. So getting out all the tools in my kitchen just to use the peel of this piece of fruit seems a little bit over the top, but let me see what I can do in my kitchen. I'm in my kitchen with the etrog that I was given, and I'm just gonna cut it open. Like I said, it looks like a large lemon. Yeah, the skin is really, really thick. Like they said, it's about, almost 3/4 of an inch. It's very fragrant. It's like a lemon sprayed with lemon dusting spray. It's so lemony, citrusy, and it has that extra floral character that we were talking about. I was told to try the pith, see what that tastes like. Surprisingly, it tastes like nothing. It's mildly lemony, but it's got the texture of jicama, a little softer, maybe. And then it's got seeds and the flesh. I'm tasting the flesh. Yeah, no juice will come out, and there's not really anything I can do with it. So I can see why somebody might say, let's make a celebration out of this fruit, because its nutritional value is pretty small. Here I am in my kitchen, hosting a show called Playing with Food, and I'm playing around with this etrog, and there's not much to do with it. Am I disappointed? No. It's an interesting thing, it's an interesting fruit, and to think that it grows here on the Central Coast, so our Jewish brothers and sisters can celebrate their holidays, is fantastic and amazing. So I'm gonna take a sliver of the rind, and I'm gonna put it in a drink. They decided to make limoncello, etrog limoncello, but I'm just gonna put it maybe in some vodka and taste that. So I got one of the vodkas from my show about Central Coast spirits, and I'm going to just pour it neat and add a garnish of etrog rind. Twist it a bit to get those oils out. Plop it in. It gives it that citrusy aroma,
and the floralness of the etrog that any clear spirit would enjoy.
Rabbi Lan even suggests that there is little culinary use.
The etrog is edible. It's a citrus fruit. After the holiday, it's made into jams and jellies, but it's really not as versatile as, let's say, other citrus that we know. Like a lemon can be used for anything. Oranges and grapefruits can be used anytime you'd like. A citron is kind of a limited fruit. It's a fruit that actually grew up in a desert. So it's got a very, very thick skin so that it can withstand the heat and the sun. Yet, if you open it up, it does have a small fleshy section in it that you can actually eat or turn it into jellies or jams.
And he reiterated what Robin told me.
You can make jam with the little bit of flesh that's in there. What's the jam like? Is it like a marmalade?
Yeah, it is like a marmalade, and it's actually very good. But it's short-lived because how much jam and jelly can you make out of, oh, I would say maybe it's 2 square inches worth of actual juicy, fleshy citrus fruit. When you go to make lemonade, you can go and you can get a bag of lemons for, I don't know, a very reasonable amount of money, and you put it in a little lemon squeezer, and you can create lemonade for the neighborhood. But when it comes to an etrog, there's very, very little inside, and so you have to go out of your way to collect enough of them to make a jar of jelly.
Another thing I discovered is that Norman Beard and Inga and David are growing a different variety of etrog.
The etrog that I'm familiar with, and I've been all over the world seeing etrogs, they're the size of a medium to large lemon, and maybe just a little bit bigger. I've never seen anything that's as big as like a football.
Oh, these ones are the size of Nerf footballs.
My goodness. Huh. Well, maybe they've got a special strain. That's wonderful. So I have to look into that. I'd love to have one of those for my own personal celebration.
They are growing Yemenite citron, which is the size of a Nerf football. Indeed, the Yemenite variety contains no juice vesicles in its fruit. Both the tree and the mature fruit are larger than those of other varieties of citron, and it is the only pulpless citron used as etrog. No etrog jam for me. Still, Norman and Inga and David are growing these etrog trees with some demand for them at this time of year, but it's not necessarily the best time of year.
This holiday, given our climate, comes at the worst time because these trees undergo sort of like during the summer severe drought and kind of drop fruit. After like a big rain in the winter or fall, it's just full of fruit. I mean, we picked like, I don't know, almost hundreds of pounds in the spring.
And they aren't perfect.
From my understanding is in a traditional, they can't be grafted. And I think these trees are all grafted. I think this is the graft line. But there's a lot of rabbis who care more that it's local and that it's organic and that it's from here, because most of them get imported all the way from Israel or Italy. So there's more of an interest in the fruit itself. I mean, it's kind of amazing.
Despite those limitations, Inga and David are trying their best to honor the tradition that these fruit represent. Okay, did you know the significance of the fruit when you got here?
No, I had to look it up and then realized, like, oh, somebody had a plan here.
Yeah. And we've had numerous friends who are Jewish who came out and would, like, talk to us about the tradition, the history, and talk to us about the ceremony. So that's actually been really fun, just to learn and to be able to have that engagement with our friends. We've learned is that part of the Jewish tradition, you really aren't supposed to ever remove any fruiting tree. They're not really edible. I mean, the pith is, you see how large it is, and the fruit inside is maybe the size of a ping pong ball, and it's bitter. But we want to sort of like honor that tradition, so kind of trying to keep them all alive. Inga's really the one who's done all the maintaining of the orchard.
But they aren't utilizing their etrog plantation as a cash crop. You're maintaining these trees, you're keeping them organic, you're spending a lot of your own well water and time and energy, but they're available, but you're not marketing them.
True. Why? Because we're crazy.
You're not living like the American dream here. So have you thought about how you can make these useful? I'm not just saying, you know, financially, but useful in whatever way, however you define that word.
I would, you know, it'd be great because we have so many and they produce year round, not only for this one holiday. I mean, these trees just go on. You could year round producing fruit. So it'd be great if it spread their love.
The liturgy around it can be heard in synagogues around the world during Sukkot.
So when you hold the bundle and you get ready to shake them, you lift them up, then down and into the four corners, and you smell the beautiful etrog, you say, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu al nitilat luhulav.
That's fantastic, thank you.
But when it comes to experimenting with etrog in the kitchen, particularly with the Yemenite variety, there seem to be few options, and I think I came up with the best one.
Well, I've tasted just about everything that you've mentioned. I mean, I've had some cakes with etrog in it, I've had jelly and I've had jam with them, and I've zested them into some things, but never with vodka. And so during this holiday of Sukkot, on the Sabbath evening, I think I'm going to get some very good vodka, and I'm going to try putting a little bit of etrog in it to see what that tastes like.
Well, well, a priest and a rabbi walked into a bar and created a new drink. Now that is interfaith dialogue. I'm Father Ian, and I'm playing with food.